Can open these windows?
Let's see.
Can we ask, questions?
Oh, you can ask verbally also, but or you can write them down either way. I'll probably take the written ones first. I often find writing helpful for two reasons. Sometimes devotees are shy to ask questions verbally. I know you're not shy in any way. Another reason is that it often helps devotees to formulate their questions better. Although sometimes even when they're written, you can't understand what on earth it's all about. But it does help. It also spares me the having to choose between dozens of hands going up. So verbally maybe also, but if there are written ones, I'm sure to ask. What does it mean for devotees to be situated properly? Is this according to Varnashram or according to spiritual standards? And also for Mataji's, is it just to serve her husband or something more? Well, ultimately, situated properly means Jive Surup Hoy Krishen Yukta Das. Means to be situated in one's service to Krishna. Actually, to be situated properly means to be situated in Golok Vrindavan. Not even in this material world, unless we're coming from there to do something here. Otherwise, just to be in this material world is in itself not situated properly. But the basic proper position of the jiva is to be situated in service to Krishna. Now, Krishna has also given the Varnashram system, which not only helps persons to regulate their life so that they can come to Krishna consciousness, but also facilitates the practice of Krishna consciousness. Although it's a bit of a complex subject, and that's why there's confusion about this many times. That some of the rules and regulations of Varnashram, basically the Varnashram system, parallels the social structure of the spiritual world, in which Krishna is superficially a Vaishya. Nanda Maharaj is superficially a Vaishya. So there's some social structure and spiritual existence also, even because just to facilitate Krishna's pastimes, we see that Krishna, Nanda Maharaj respects Garbha Rishi as being a Brahmana, and Nanda Maharaj as a Vaishya. And other Brahmanas, Bhagavari Muni, they come to Vrindavan and they respect. This arrangement is in the spiritual world, not for regulating material existence, but for facilitating Krishna's Leela. We can't say regulating spiritual existence because it's not regulated in the same way that material existence is. So this Varnashram system operates in the material world both to facilitate advancement in Krishna consciousness, and even when we are situated in Krishna consciousness, still there's some social system. It's not that, and this one is avadhut beyond the social system, but that's unusual. Avadhut by its very definition is unusual. So even within this material world, within material existence, that's also there. And devotees can go on within their social status, following the rules of Varnashram, as are suitable for advancing in Krishna consciousness. That's loka hi va. What is that? I can't remember the verse exactly. It's from. Oh, I can look it up in here. I can find it. Anyway, there's a verse in the Narada Pancharatra which states, it's quoted in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which states that a devotee should follow all societal social rules whether traditional or according to the Veda, which are Hari Bhakti Anukulas, that are favorable for advancing in Krishna consciousness. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur made some very interesting comment in this regard, that in the beginning stages of bhakti, one should follow those the rules of Varnashram, even if they may have some impediment to pure devotional service, even if they're not exactly in the line of pure devotional service. Because some of the Varnashram rules, they may actually be contradictory to pure devotional service. Some of the basically devotees and non-devotees, they follow the same, as we were discussing at the camp, rising early, within Varnashram, they follow the same. Rising early, taking bath, doing puja, studying shastra, non-devotees do this also. It's just they have a different purpose in doing so, and they may not study the same shastras, and they will not do the same pujas, but the same basic culture, respecting seniors and so on. But there may be, it may be in some cases that the Varnashram rules, even if followed with Krishna fully in the center, it may be that some of the rules, they are, it may be that some of the Smarta Vidhi and the Vaishnava Vidhi, they clash. It may be just like now is this Purushottam Adhik Mas, the month of Purushottam, which the smartest they call Malamas, which means contaminated months. Whereas the devotees they recognize as Purushottam Mas, it's a highly auspicious month. So what the smartest do in this time and what the devotees do is different, but their whole concept in how to observe is different. Similarly, in Shraddha or death ceremonies, the smartas they observe Prita Shraddha. They make offerings with the idea to release their ancestors from becoming ghosts. Whereas Vaishnavas, if your father is a Vaishnava, there's no question of him becoming a ghost. It's offensive to observe Shraddha in this way. So Vaishnavas may not observe Shraddha, understanding that the devotee is anyway fully under the protection of Krishna. Or they may observe Shraddha with a different concept and a different manner altogether to help their forefathers, if they haven't come to the, if they didn't fully come to the platform of devotional service, and by distributing Krishna prasadam. So, now it may be that in one's family, the family usages are the one maybe from smarter backgrounds. In Varnashram system, there are Vaishnavas and there are smarters. And smarter usages, they cover the whole spectrum of non-devotees, whether they're Shaivas or Saudas or Gama Bhaktias or Shaktas or whatever they may be. So, one shouldn't. Bhagavatam says one should, in the beginning of devotional service, he should even follow those usages in the beginning stages which may not be favorable for his bhakti. Because he's recommending a transitory level, that one not immediately try to jump up to the level of pure devotional service. He says when one is advanced, then only he should give up those Varnashram practices which are contrary to devotional service. So it's a very revolutionary thing. Bhakti Samsara Thakur, he took a different stance. He rebelled against the current of the prevalent social usages and saying that no, we should come to the pure devotional platform. So properly situated is at two levels. Just like we see Arjuna, he was more or less properly situated as a devotee of Krishna, but he wasn't understanding what was his proper duty according to Varnashram. But then Krishna said, you have to follow what I said. And in this instance, your duty is to fight. So Krishna in Bhagavad Gita speaks of swadharma, or one's own dharma, or proper occupation. So that's on two levels. The swadharma of the jiva, the intrinsic dharma, is the jaya dharma, the jiva's dharma, which is to serve Krishna. But there's also swadharma as Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or woman. There's Brahma dharma, Kshatriya dharma, Vaishya dharma, Shudra dharma, and Stri dharma. And for Stri, her basic dharma will be according to, she has her basic duties, which are generic to all women or whatever. Actually, women, they take their varna from their husband. So, and then there are other duties that they have to perform which are particular to their varna, which they take from their husband. Their varna they take from their husband. So Brahmani means wife of a Brahman. It's not that a woman has her own intrinsic varna. She may, of course, she has her own characteristics. And she will be married accordingly. But if a woman even of what might be called Brahminical type characteristics, if she's married to a Kshatriya, which isn't recommended, just like Devayani married to who Devayani married? Yeah. So he didn't want to enter into that because she's of a higher caste. But anyway, she is supposed to adjust herself to her husband. So how to be situated properly according to Varna? Yes, a devotee, he should act according to, as a devotee according to his Varnashram. Particular Varnashram situation also. A Brahmachari doesn't have to be a grihastha, especially in the matter of sex. He cannot, it's not possible. He has to have a wife to indulge in illicit sex. If a so-called Brahmachari indulges in sex, he's not, unless he's properly married and is a grihastha Brahmachari, then there's no scope for him to do something whatsoever. Similarly, if a grihastha acts as a brahmachari, he's also not acting in the matter of sex. But he's also, according to Shastra, a grihastha is supposed to have children. And that, what is that? Putrate kriyate bhari. Prabhupada quoted this one, accepts a wife for the sake of having sons. So, it is actually a grihastha's duty to have children. I mean, if for some biological reason he can't, it's something else. It's supposed to. And actually do it. So, yes, we should, on both levels. If one, the Varnashram system is supposed to situate persons according to their psychophysical condition acquired under the modes of material nature, so that they may execute Krishna consciousness or whatever level they're on, whether they're mostly karma kandir, to execute that peacefully or on, even within devotional service. We see that devotees gravitate towards different kinds of services, naturally, because everyone has different propensities. So the Varnashram system is to regulate that. And we'll generally find that one, if a devotee is engaged in a service that he's not fit for, then he won't be situated properly in Krishna's service either. Theoretically, a devotee can do anything for Krishna. But if someone, for instance, if someone who is not capable is put in a management position, they don't have leadership qualities, then they'll be disturbed, and they'll probably disturb everyone else also, either by their improper action or inaction or whatever. Similarly, if someone who is inclined towards very brahminical kind of duties is, especially studying shastras, and he's put in a service where he doesn't have that opportunity, and then he'll naturally hanker for that opportunity. So, on one hand, a devotee should be ready to do any kind of service, but on the other hand, it's generally better that devotees are engaged in services which they like to do. We can say which they like to do. Of course, a devotee shouldn't dislike to do any service, but if he has a particular inclination towards a particular type of service, then if he's engaged in that, then he's more likely to be. It's just, you don't need to write a PhD thesis on this. It's natural human psychology. So, situated properly means situated, ultimately means to be situated in pure devotional service. But also, according to our psychophysical propensities, it's good to see which service is suitable for us. Now, in the beginning of our devotional lives, if we talk about brahmacharya, the ashram, we're just given whatever service, do it. That's training in surrender, without which it's difficult to make advancement without that basic training in surrender. So first services means clean the parts, clean the floor. And it may be that one keeps on doing that for 20, 30 years also. But it may be that one goes on to other services also. And in situations where one's, for instance, there's a new preaching center, then it's every service. Just like if you're the temple president in a new preaching center, you're usually also the chief cook, and the chief head pujari, and chief floor cleaner, and chief book printer, and chief answering the telephone, and everything. So that's doing the needful. Now, when we turn to our Varnashram, it's all very nice to discuss all these things, but there is no Varnashram in the modern age, if you haven't noticed. So it makes it more difficult. And there are many reasons why people are discontented in modern society. I'm not just talking about devotees, you know. I mean, I hope devotees aren't discontent, but I'm talking about society in general. One of the many reasons is that most people are engaged in doing things that they don't want to do. People do a job, and if they had the choice, they wouldn't do it. They're just doing it because they need to get some money to support their families. But it's not what they want to do. They don't feel content doing it. We talk of job satisfaction, but most people don't have it. Most people feel frustrated at their work. And if they had the choice, they'd do something else. But by force of necessity, due to this demoniac economic system, let's be frank, and I think, why beat around the bush, as it's said in the how to say that? Why not speak frankly? It's in modern society is demoniac. And it doesn't mean that we hate everyone in this society, but it's based on the wrong principle that life, the human life, is meant for gratification of the senses. And no one is happy, everyone is frustrated. One of the things is that most people spend most of their lives in some occupation which they don't like, out of force of necessity, and devotees also find themselves in that situation. So, what's the solution? Go to the land. And the devotees say, well, I'm not a farmer. Well, it's in Vedic society, or land, agrarian basis, so not everyone is a farmer. There are the Vaishyas, or those who are producing grains, and they're the part of society, but there are also teachers, doctors, black craftsmen. There are so many different other occupations. And especially Vaishyas, they produce grains and milk products. But as you can see in people who live on the land, even today, in Croatia and Slovenia, because there's so many people who live on the land. But they may be, or even in villages, someone may be the local doctor or local teacher, but they have some little land and they produce their own vegetables. And until recently, I mean, when I was a kid, it was still normal for people to. My father used to keep chickens and had some land. Of course, we don't keep chickens. He used to keep pigs at one point too. And the point is that people used to. We're not recommending keep chickens and pigs. But the point is that until recently, people used to produce most of their own food at home. And grains they would take from outside. So the fact, because grains they generally require big fields. So most people would have a little garden and then produce flowers and vegetables and they'd have some trees, so you got apples in season like that. So it's a very normal thing. I mean, it doesn't require any big brains to work it out. This is how society can be organized. And people may say, well, I'm not a farmer, but at least this much. You're at home, you grow your vegetables, and most of your food necessities at home. So that was Prabhupada's solution. And to this problem of, I'm not properly situated. This question is that I'm doing some kind of job. I'm doing the activities of another, but I feel I belong to one Brahman, is the next question. And at the same time, I'm doing the activities of another Brahman. Yeah, everyone more or less is doing the activities of a Shudra, or not even really a Shudra. Because Shudra in Vedic culture, they don't work for money, but they have a specific master who they'll be under all their lives. Or they'll be like the village Baba, he goes around and shaves everyone. And whenever he calls them, and he helps in marriages also. Barbers have functions in marriages also. And there should be a barber at the marriage. They do certain things. So the barber, if someone calls in the village, someone calls the barber to shave, and then what? Do they pay him? No, they don't pay him. He comes, he shaves him, and he goes. No payment. It's his duty to shave. And then that's all, there's no payment. And still the washerman, he washes everyone's clothes, no payment. And then when there's a harvest, they give, you take grains, like this. And on festivals, the Vaishyas, the wealthy Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas, you're read in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna book, they give away clothes that they use, but still nice. They give away clothes to the Shudras. So this all their needs are met. No money, no payment. Everyone does what they have for their service, and they whatever it is, Baba, washerman, potter, whatever people need, he'll produce, he'll give them, no payment. And people aren't greedy, they don't ask, now I need 10,000 pots. You go on, and I'll go and sell it, and make it. You can't sell it because no one needs, because they have in their village their own potters. So you can't sell pots anyway. So like this, it's a different concept of society. So the question is, how can we regulate this in our society which is still not built? The answer is we can't. So for now we just have to go on living like some kind of shudras, unfortunately. Or maybe some attempt to be some kind of vaishya, but selling something. Now, but get back to this question. For Matajis, is it enough to serve our husband or something more? Well, for ladies, they also have to chant Hare Krishna. If she serves her husband as her husband is a Vaishnava, she's very well situated. That's why Vyasadeva said that the women are more fortunate than men. Because the men, they may have to perform so many austerities and so many things to become spiritually advanced. But the women, they just have to serve their husbands, that's all. And particularly if he's a Vaishnava, by doing that, they will make advancement. But of course, women themselves, they should also chant Hare Krishna. Sometimes it may not be possible, especially if they have young babies. It's very difficult. They may somehow or other chant 16 rounds, but they, young babies, you have to watch them all the time, and the babies, they don't have time off. And if they want to scream in the middle of the night, then if they want to be fed in the middle of the night, they have to be fed. And the mother can't say, well, you know, it's the wrong time, wait till later. They have to learn right there. So it may be difficult. Often those women, they find it very difficult to have any kind of regulated spiritual practices. And those who are serious, very serious, they somehow they chant 16 kinds of something almost resembling round. But maybe very, and if you have two young children, then it's very difficult. But by their sincere endeavor to bring their children up in Krishna consciousness, coupled with their service to their husband who's serving Krishna, then it's everything is better. But is it? Yes, women should as much as possible follow street dharma, and that can be done when they're grown up, which means from the age of puberty, by being married and serving their husband. And although there's much protest against this, you know, this one today, we find that ladies, they're satisfied if they're married and they're this. So satisfied means no one's fully satisfied in this material world. But they are situated properly if they're married. And if they're not married, then it may be very difficult for them, actually. Especially as they get older. So it's not 100% essential, but we see generally everyone. Prabhupada said that everyone should get married, especially women. That gives the indication that some men they may not. But women especially, if they're married, then married to a nice devotee husband. Of course, sometimes they come and say, well, my husband is devotee, but he's not nice, I don't like it. This happened almost a few years ago. A couple came to me and said, we want your blessings for divorce. So I said, no way. No way, no way. So you don't divorce. You stay together. He said, well, what is it? Is my bad karma? I got him as a husband. He said, maybe. There's some disciples of mine, they're from India. And they were married, usually according to the usual system of the astrologer checked it. And then after some time, they went back to the astrologer and said, you sure you got it right? And his guru was there, and his guru looked at the child and he said to the astrologer, who had, the astrologer's guru, astrology guru, said, he said, what are you doing? Nonsense? They're not matched at all. What is this? But anyway, they're married one way or the other. It may be in their child that they got married to someone incompatible. And they're going on. There's no question in their mind of separation or divorce or anything. And they're going on. The wife told me that the astrologer told me, everything wrong. And in her childhood, it must be a different astrologer, because in her childhood, when she was teenage, she was told that in future you will be serving sadhus. And she laughed. Me serving sadhus? I'm interested in it. I'm not religious. And now she's serving sadhus. She has so much opportunity to do so. So, everyone should be married, especially women should be married. Some men may remain brahmachari. Not married, but mostly everyone will be married, especially women. And then comes the question, well, we generally find that more women than men come to Krishna consciousness than men, some of the men say Brahmacharya. And then the answer that we find in Prabhupada's books is polygamy. which is not very much welcomed in our society, because Prabhupada spoke against it. Although in his books he writes, therefore we are in favor of polygamy on this point. But then he said, in our society this should not go on. But what I understand from this is that Prabhupada didn't want devotees who were supported by, at that time, most of the grihasthas in ISKCON. They were supported by the temple. So when Prabhupada said, we cannot endorse this in our society, I understand from this because on one hand he said, yes, it's required, otherwise how will the women get husbands? But on the other hand he said, no, we can't endorse it in our society. So I understand that independent grihasthas, if they have enough income, they could, and probably even there's some means of doing this. She said, well, how can we do it? It's illegal. And Prabhupada said, well, you can keep another wife as girlfriend. To the public, it can be like that, although the commitment will be to accept another wife, but to the public, you can say it's going to be girlfriend. So anyway, it's a highly controversial topic, but it should be considered, because it is a problem in our society, in ISKCON, that there are many devotee women who don't find husbands, and they're not happy, because it's required that women be protected. Protected is, it doesn't just mean standing with a gun or something like that, but it also, they need shelter. Their psychophysical nature is that their psychological nature is they need shelter. And they're not happy to be alone like that. So, like I said, it's a big topic, and it's probably, if this gets out, that I'm saying about polygamy, it'll be something else that I'll be, said it's another rascalism of B.B. Swami, another of these wrong things that he's talking about. I read it in Prabhupada's books, and it makes sense. Now there are problems associated with that. That, as Prabhupada said, that some lusty men may join our society to take advantage. But I don't think so, because lusty men don't have to join ISKCON to indulge their senses. There's no shortage of. You could do so without joining ISKCON. But Prabhupada didn't want that men would take advantage of the ISKCON structure and get some situation within it, supported by ISKCON. And Prabhu, can you organize my marriage ceremony as number 5? And the temple is paying for it all. Not like that. But if you can, if a man can actually, if he can produce enough income, which isn't so easy, if you have enough land, it may be possible. In fact, if you have enough land, then having extra wives can be useful. Even economically. It's the whole Vaishnava system is actually an economic arrangement, isn't it? Economy in the modern sense means money. But economy in the pristine sense means, what is that? Dhanavan. Gavyo Dhanavan, to have grains and cows. This is considered wealth, not to have paper, which the government can any day just, they'll change the value overnight. There's some word. I remember when I was a kid in England, the government did it. They just changed the value overnight. So that the money that you have is just becomes worth 50% less or something. Devaluation is called in Greek. There's some word I can't remember. But the public was outraged. But what can they do? It was like 25% or something like that. They just changed the value by decree. So whatever money you had in the bank or whatever, it just became 25% less valuable. Cheating. But you can't do that with cows and land and furniture. So if you have sufficient land, then to have extra wives can be more useful, because it's work required. And it's not only the land, but they're spinning, making clothes, and then just like you have so many, you produce so, there's so many, so much fruit comes all in one season, it's all ripe at once, what are you going to do? They make a chutney and you can eat it in the winter, when there's no vegetables being grown. So, and then, to have children is good, because you have more sons and they can work, and it helps to work the land. It's not funny, it's just a fact of life, that's all. Nowadays, to have more children is a burden, because you have to work, and it's money. You have to raise money, and then you have, that's why they think, better have an abortion than a baby. The babies are expensive. But children are actually useful, because they have working the land. So it's a different outlook altogether. Anyway, it's a good topic. But maybe some of our devotees think today. Some of our grihastha, I've been speaking to different grihastha devotees privately about this. And there's some of them, those who are responsible men are seeing this problem, that there are many young women, and then they become less young, and it becomes more of a problem to get them married, as each day goes on. Because even men who want to get married, they always say, where's the young beautiful one? So, I guess that's natural, but how to protect all these women? And then the answer is which is frowned on in modern society. They say, oh, it's very bad. But then they don't mind it. They don't think it's very bad to get divorced and trash one woman, two women, but polygamy, oh no, that's very bad. So it's another symptom of a demoniac society, that they allow divorce, but they don't allow polygamy. So you want to have another wife, okay, but look after the first one. We don't mind, we're not against. You want five wives, fine. Look after the first four also. Don't dump them. Then, any more questions? The first wife may not like it if another one comes, but they also have to be understanding for the whole female population, for the better benefit of them. Although I saw recently some interviews were conducted among African tribes where polygamy is normal, and they were asking, don't you feel bad that you have to share your husband with five other women? And say, no, it's nice. And then they said, we have some company at home. Otherwise, just me and it's like that now. It's me and the kids, and the husband's out of work. So it's nice. So it's like they're all like sisters, you know? They're all together, we work together, and we sing together, and all these things. At the actual, you spoke how Srila Vyasa is always right, even if we can't prove it scientifically. Sometimes, however, devotee scientists still manage to explain it so that we can understand, like Umandala, ten-headed Ravana, etc. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it said that there are worms in the womb which bite the fetus. The doctors have many instruments to observe the happening in the womb, but they didn't discover any worms. Can you explain further this statement of Srimad Bhagavatam about worms in the womb? The doctors talk about, I don't know if they know, but the Bhagavatam talks about worms. And they say that if they're biting, if you take too much, if the wife or the mother takes hot foods, then it's burning. So maybe like that, worms, that may also include when it's talking about worms, that may also include what we call like germs or microbes or like that. So the doctors accept that there are microbes in the womb, right? That may also bite the fetus. Not exactly the microbes don't bite, but they're also there in the womb with the baby. And if you eat certain foods, then if you eat lots of sweets, especially gur, we don't have that in this country, it's molasses, then the worms in the stomach increase. I don't know in this country, but India it's very common that people have worms in their stomach. And if you eat in the intestines. Here also? Is it common or not very common? What do you say, Doctor? It's rare, right? Maybe because that's a hot climate or whatever.
No, it's rare.
Definitely there are people do eat. Well, there are different kinds of worms. There are long tapeworms. But there are very tiny little ones also. The discussion is worms in the womb. I was discussing as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not a biology class, but we're discussing the validity of Srimad Bhagavatam. Just a second, I'll just finish the point I'm making. So we can actually see that when we eat lots of gur, that these little worms, they come out in the stool actually, lying. So they increase. And you also feel itching in your backside, which is a symptom of having worms. So in Ayurveda, they recommend that women, they should be very controlled in their diet. Because otherwise these various worms and various microbes, that in modern terminology we call microbes, they will bite the child and cause pain to the child. Please, Hare Krishna. What are you going to say? Cancer is called by microbic worms or germs.
Yes,
you see, when the Bhagavatam talks about species, atoms, worms, it may not exactly correspond with modern biological terminology. That's also to be considered. Definitely when the Bhagavatam talks about species, or the Paramana doesn't correspond to the modern atom. It's not exactly the same thing. You want to know more about that? Read Sahaja Swami's recent article on the atom, atomic theory, on his blog. Some Grihastha devotees objectively prefer engaging more in preaching than having children. They justify having a wife that is to help them keep a peaceful mind. Even they quote Srila Prabhupada's Dhamma has obligatory for Grihastha to engage in sex life. So is that attitude wrong? Not necessarily wrong, but the devotees here are mostly young in age, and the Grihasthas here are mostly young Grihasthas. And Uncle Swami here, sitting on this seat, he's had lots of experience with many Grihasthas at different age groups. So even though I'm an unmarried uncle, I know lots of things about Grihasthas, and they tell me lots of things which they might not tell even to their friends. So it's generally found that when women get older and they don't have children, then they have a very strong craving that they should have children. So it's probably better to have them when you're young, so that you don't end up at the age of 50 when you should be a grandfather, being a father. It's better for the children also. I mean, it's more natural for them to have young parents than older parents. So you can just engage in preaching and this and that, but probably you'll find when if the wife hasn't had a baby and she's coming towards that age and she can't have one, then she'll probably, at that age, at the latest, be very desirous to have one. It usually before that, Usually, when you see young girls, I want to speak of at the age of 40, but at the age of 5, they start to, they like to carry around babies, isn't it? The woman's body brings with it the desire to have children. So, it's probably better to have babies at a younger age and then finish all that, so that by the age of 45 or whatever, then you can be a Vanaprastha. So then you do your preaching when you're mature and like this. So that's a general recommendation. Why do we devotees?
I guess you're devotees.
I'm not devotees. So you can include yourself. We don't generally refer to ourselves as devotees. We can say we're trying to be servants of the devotees. Just like we hear devotees say, well, I became a devotee 10 years ago. No, you're lucky, I'm still trying. And for me it's 30 years, but I didn't become a devotee yet. I'm hoping sometime in some way. Why do we devotees sometimes use the help of astrology if there are practically no qualified astrologers nowadays? You answer, you tell me. Why? Maybe blind angel is better than no one. In matchmaking and finding auspicious times. Well, actually, I mean, in matchmaking and finding auspicious times, when we say qualified astrologer, these are the basic duties of astrologers, and if someone, hopefully they should be able to find out these things. Although matchmaking, it's more complex than our amateur astrologers may think. Because there may be so many subtle things in the chart which an amateur may not find. Just like, for instance, one devotee who's an astrologer told me that, well, it was brought in the matter of a devotee who was married, and shortly after that he died. And it was brought to the attention of an astrologer. Not the astrologer who had seen the chart, but it was brought to another astrologer who was actually more qualified to study under. Actually, to be in any Vedic discipline, it's required that one study for a considerable time under a guru who himself has said it's parampara. It's not that you just pick up a book, teach yourself astrology, and then you become an astrologer. So they'd gone from matchmaking to a do-it-yourself homemade astrologer, and shortly afterwards he died, and they said, well, you know, why didn't the astrologer tell us? So they went, then they brought the matter to a devotee who was actually qualified as an astrologer, and he looked through all his chart, and he couldn't find death at that time, couldn't find anything there. So then he asked to see the wife's chart, and he found in the wife's chart that she must be a widow very soon. So the effect of her karma came on him. It was so powerful that she should be a widow, a young widow. So astrology is a very complex science. So in matchmaking, it's really better to go to a competent astrologer. Of course, if your devotees, Prabhupada was hoping that Prabhupada, he put marriages together when he first came to the West. I narrate something to you, it's in one of Satsuru Maharaj's books, and Prabhupada said it, and it may sound a little shocking, but anyway, Prabhupada said it. And you may see, if I was in, for instance, Chennai temple, and I narrated this publicly, they wouldn't be happy. Chennai is in South India. Because they say you shouldn't discuss these kind of things publicly, among the culture publicly. Yeah. Although, I wonder, they're on my case now for having quoted Prahlad Maharaj, Kambutivan What is that? Manasija Vishahita Dhira. This itching sensation which Prahlad Maharaj took. So I quoted that in the class in Chennai. Now, I don't know if everyone's upset, but someone's upset. But I should have said this. You shouldn't talk about sex in classes. Anyway, we don't come from such a cultured background. But anyway, even the cultured people in South India, they also suffer from this itch, even if they don't want to admit it. So it is said in Srimad Bhagavatam for our benefit. So anyway, that's another subject. But Satsu Maharaj has recorded in one of his books how Prabhupada, he saw throughout his society, this is about 1968, there are so many unmarried young girls and they're all sick. So Prabhupada said the reason that they're sick is because they're not having sex. And therefore he arranged that they all got married. He arranged a whole bunch of marriages. The Prabhupada saw it, it's a, what do you call that, psychosymptomatic, the real problem is not that it's not a bodily problem, but they're disturbed because they need sex and children and all the things which people usually do. In our society, we're saying no illicit sex. But in the common life, you know, they're either married or they're having illicit. They're either all there, you know, they're hippies and they're having sex. So it's a bodily requirement, and after that come children. So Prabhupada arranged so many marriages, he said, here, why don't you marry? This girl will marry this, and there was no astrological matching. And most of those marriages broke. Prabhupada, Satsu Maharaj comments that Prabhupada was hopeful just because they're devotees, because of the higher principle, that they'll go on. But Prabhupada saw after some time it wasn't working, and Prabhupada said, I'm not going to make any more marriages. I'm not even going to give any blessings to any marriages. You just get married and, you know, just go on. And he became Prabhupada and he said, I'm disgusted. Because they get married and they're just breaking up. Of course, Prabhupada is dealing with the Western hippies. And hopefully, you coming from Slovenia and Croatia, I hope that you may be more not as degraded as the 1960s hippies. I hope so. Maybe there's still some influence of our Catholic culture. Is it? There's still some influence? Seems like that to me. It seems in general that Croatians and Slovenians are not as degraded as Americans. So, it's hopefully you can live together. It's like, you know, your parents and your grandparents and your great-grandparents, they may have been beef eaters and wine drinkers, but they got married and they stayed together. They didn't have any serious problems, isn't it? I mean, I know some of the devotees whose parents, they also divorced and this and that, but traditionally, these problems weren't there. They got married and they stayed married. They weren't highly advanced in spiritual consciousness. But here we're talking, you know, that Ras Lila and Kofi Lila and Krishna consciousness and divorce and I don't know how it all works. Anyway, the point I'm coming to here is that if we're not on the higher platform, which we should be of Krishna consciousness, if we're not, then maybe it's probably better to have some astrological magic. But better go to a good astrologer. Astrological matching isn't everything. There's also commitment. That's more important. Just like I told these two disciples of mine, they had a mismatch astrologically. But there's no question in their mind of breaking up or any such thing, because they have the culture of being committed. So these are various considerations. Why do we use astrologers? Yeah, it's good to use astrologers, but better have a good astrologer. But what usually happens due to our lack of any system or in this country, in these countries, is that usually that some devotee, boy and girl, comes together. By boy and girl, I'm using the language they use in India, which means before you're married, you're a boy. You may be like 30 years old, but you're a boy. And girl like that also. So the only boys and girls are coming together, and they come together and they like each other, and then they write to the astrologer, and he writes back and says, no, it's a terrible match, but they're already the, you know, the chemistry is going on. So they say, well, okay, never mind, it's true. So the real system is that the parents see the astrologer first, and then the other things come afterwards. So it may not be any use in consulting an astrologer anyway. If you're already committed and you already like each other, these are big topics. There's no end. We're talking about material life, basically, and how to fit it with spiritual life. So it's never a very good proposition. As someone asked Prabhupada about how can we run a spiritual organization in this material world? If I was a spiritual organization in the material world, doubtful proposition. But anyway, somehow we have to run it on. So it's like that. All these material adjustments, it's always difficult. But keeping the high ideal of Krishna consciousness in the forefront, following the guidelines given in Shastra, we go on. That refers to the whole society of ISKCON, it refers to family life in Krishna consciousness. There may be some disturbance. Quite well. But anyway, we go on. Keeping the ideal in front. Any other question?
Jain Kuru Puja. I can't read. What's it?
Mataji.
Oh, is it? That says Mataji. I was reading as a G. The M. I couldn't make out what it said. Offering flowers to Srila Prabhupada and then hear obeisances from a distance. One GBC member said that such behavior is actually offensive because they turn their back to Srila Prabhupada and said it is correct to give obeisances in front of Srila Prabhupada as Matajis did before Srila Prabhupada's departure. Please comment. I don't really have much to say about this. I mean, either way, if you go a distance from Prabhupada, then it's also, you don't have to turn your back to him. Prabhupada didn't say either way. The lady devotees, when Prabhupada was present, they used to offer obeisances to him right in front of him. And he didn't say there's anything wrong with this. According to Vedic culture, women will offer obeisances to a man, whether it's guru or whether it's their father-in-law or their father, from some distance. They may be closer if they're directly with their husband, but it's the normal thing in a joint family, family means joint family. Nowadays, family means not disjointed family. And now they have one parent family, which isn't a family at all. But in any normal family, which means the elders are there, and then the next generation, the sons will come with their wives each morning to offer their obeisances to his father, and maybe their grandfather also. So they'll come with their wives. But if the wife may be offering obeisances not in the presence of her husband, then they'll do from distance. That's the normal culture. But Prabhupada didn't say anything when his disciples used to do. Maybe it's coming to a better standard of culture if the Matajis do so from a little distance. But I, you know, if they do directly in front of Prabhupada, I don't see it, you know, it's, I'm not going to go on a campaign for this one. I've got more important things to go on campaigns for. So if the Mataji is offered in front of them, I don't, you know, it doesn't bother me, but it may be a higher standard of, I'm not saying it's wrong, but it may be a better if they do so from a living person. It's more culture, we could say. And they may also not want to offer businesses with so many men. That's also a consideration. So another GPC has, well, he says that it's wrong because they turn their back to Prabhupada. Oh, that's one thing. I say, well, it's not necessary. You can also walk backwards without turning your back. And also saying it's correct to do so directly in front of Prabhupada because that was done before Prabhupada's departure. Well, it's not necessary that everything we did when Prabhupada was present is the best standard or the highest standard. It may be that Prabhupada sometimes did introduce a higher standard because, as Prabhupada said, as up till now we have done for working, but in future we should be more strict. So I see that Prabhupada, he many times spoke about this, that he wanted to introduce the higher standards of Vedic culture. He said his Western disciples should come to India to learn that. So it may be that Prabhupada allowed many things, but that he wanted his Western disciples to come to India to learn a higher culture. So if they did invite that Prabhupada, he didn't insist that they follow all the fine details, but if they did so, Prabhupada was, he also wanted that, because it's better for our spiritual advancement to do so. So, that's also considered.